All right, you can go ahead and have a seat after you're done giving high fives and telling the people how good they look. Man, 9:30 crowd, great to have you here this morning. My name's Kurt. And, you know, one of the things we've been looking at in this series is how, you know, men are always trying to prove themselves. And sometimes it's in weird and false ways. And this is just a part of our kind of crisis of masculinity in our culture today. And so as we end the series, we're really going to talk today about one of the linchpins of the five marks of manhood. And I'm going to briefly hit all five of them here in a moment. But this one that we're going to look at today is really the one that helps cement us and the other ones depend on. So let me pray for us before we go any further. God, thank you. We can come into this dark room an hour earlier than our bodies are used to. And God, thank you for blessing us. You've really been doing a good thing in us during this series, and you're still doing a good thing in us. And so I just pray that you would continue to take us new places today. May the words that come out of my mouth be helpful to every single heart and every single mind that's in earshot today. God, I pray, too, that they're pleasing to you, and most importantly, that they're in alignment with your heart. And I just pray these things according to your character, Jesus. Amen. So, you know, this idea, this feeling of for men especially, and women, you may not get this, that, you know, men, that feeling, you know, to feel like a man, it never goes away. And it seems like as men, we're always trying to prove ourselves, whether it's by the number of digits in our bank account or, you know, the size of biceps that we're building. Or, you know, I know for myself, one of the things I really don't enjoy is going to conferences with other pastors. And I enjoy other pastors. I just don't always enjoy hanging out with them because, you know, pastors are always trying to need to prove who's bigger, right? Churches, I mean, all right? Who's bigger regarding churches? Hey, you guys, that's funny. That's what, at least for guys, that's funny. You know, and so these are the things that go through our minds. And so, you know, in our last time today, talking just to men, which, by the way, let's thank the ladies for hanging in on this thing. Man, ladies, you have been phenomenal. You've been hanging in. You've been great team players on this. And I tell you what, it's been really cool, some of the stories I've received, specifically from women over the last, you know, really 5 weeks, 6 weeks, about how helpful the series has been, not just to them, but to the men in their life, and how they're seeing some of the whether it's their boyfriend or husband or their sons stepping up in protection mode, or maybe, you know, working, you know, the working mode, not just, you know, working for a paycheck, but bringing the grit and the grunt to the family and in terms of serving the family. I've heard stories of men operating better in team contexts. These are all the marks of manhood. You know, men not abdicating themselves from critical family decisions, saying, "Oh, how do you just handle it?" You know, men stepping up to the plate and being a part of that. Men taking minority positions. I mean, we've got men doing this. We've got men, especially men that have joined the Fight Club over the last week. I mean, you're going in a different direction, men, and you know what that means for you, but you're doing things the rest of men in our culture are not doing right now. And so, you know, when we do these things, we're cementing things. We're cementing something for ourselves in our lives. And so today, we're going to wrap this thing up by really drilling deeply into this fifth kind of mark. And this one helps us get resolved. It helps us really determine who we're going to be from this day forward. And so this is the mark of vision. Vision. Vision is a picture of where you want to go. All right, and so that's the fifth mark, and we're going to really drill into this today. And here's the thing. Men have vision. Boys just live day to day. There's going to be five things that define or delineate the difference between boys and men on the point of vision today. See, boys just take the path of least resistance. Boys think, oh, I want all the candy, and I want it right now. Boys, they just think about how can I have fun today. There's no long-term thought. You know, men, they have a picture of where they want to go, and they set their eyes on that place, and they begin to go someplace. George H. W. Bush, the first George Bush, he said something really fascinating. He said this. He said, "Some people say I don't have vision. I don't see that." See, vision, that's a real quote, by the way. That's seriously, that's like real, all right? Vision is where you have a picture of where you want to go, and you begin to go to that place. And so I'm not talking about men knowing all the Ten Commandments. I'm not talking about men having guiding principles in their life or having voices of wisdom speaking in their lives. Everybody should have that, right? We should all have that. No, vision is where you say, you know, here's what is unique about me and what God's calling me to as a man. And it's going to define your activities. It's going to define your calendar. It's going to define your checkbook. It's going to define your daydream. And what you begin to do is you begin to trailblaze. All right? See, boys, you know what boys want to do? Boys just want to stay in the pack. You know where the pack is? The pack is on the well-worn path. That's where the pack is. See, that's where everybody else is. But men, on the other hand, say, no, my life, God is calling me to do something unique with my life, and that means I'm going to have to do something different than what everybody else is doing. I'm going to have to trailblaze. You know, here at Crosspoint, we have a vision. We have a vision to be a place where it's okay not to have it all together. We have a vision for this to be a place where people can come and not have to wade through a whole bunch of religious lingo and where you can just explore and experience Jesus for who he really is and get connected in meaningful relationships with others. That's our vision here. And I tell you what, no question about it, over the last 10 years, which by the way, do you guys realize, anybody know what last weekend was? We've been so focused on where we've been going and where we are going. Last weekend, we turned 10. Congratulations, you're 10, Crosspoint. You're like not a kid anymore. You're a tweener, all right? You're officially, you know, moving to junior high years. Yeah, we had a birthday last weekend. We're so focused on where we're going. But here's the thing. No question about it, over the last 10 years, you know, the most criticism that we've gotten as a church and that I've gotten as a pastor is from church people. From church people. Why is that? It's because church people like to be in a pack by themselves. Church people like to be around people who have the same beliefs as them. Church people like to have the same music taste. They like to have the same like secondary doctrinal ideas. You know, church people always like to hang in their pack. And so when we said, no, we're going to be a church that reaches people who don't like going to church. We want to be a church that reaches people who are interested in God, but they've checked out on church. We're going to have to trailblaze. And so what that means is, as a pastor, I'm going to have to talk like pastors don't talk, all right? I mean, because if guys wanted to go hear pastors talk the way they normally talk, guess what? There's all kinds of places around here they could go. They'd be going, but guess what? Guys aren't going. So we got to do things different. I mean, I get criticized by illustrations I use, by the language I use. See, my goal isn't to hold up and be like other pastors. I'm trying to connect with people like I'd connect with them on my back patio. I'm trying to connect with men and women, and we'd have the same conversation here that we would have if we were sitting in a bar together. I mean, we get criticized for our music. You know, how loud it is, how many lights are all over the place. Listen, we want you to feel our music. We want it to be like you're sitting at Klipsch Music Center, and you're like, oh, man, I love what's happening here. You know, whether you know the song or not, you know, that's what we want. And see, anything that has a vision gets criticized. It's going to get criticism. Boys don't understand that. Boys don't ever want to do something that's going to put them in a place where they get criticized. See, any vision you have, you're going to get criticized for. Whether it's saying, I'm going to be the first person in my family to go and get a college education. Your family's going to go, well, why would you do that? It's a waste of money and time. You need to work. Well, that is your work. Being a student is your work. You know, maybe it's saying, hey, when I say I do, I'm going to make my I do till death do us part. Maybe that's not been a model in your family. That's a vision that you have for yourself. You say, I'm going to go start a business. I don't know what it is. I don't have any idea what it is, but I know the vision God has for you, man, is it's unique to you. And it's part of what clearly identifies the reason that you're on this planet. And see, when you begin to get this, you get a focus. Men are able to focus on the future, whereas boys leave their options open. See, when you focus, it defines what you're going to do and what you're not going to do. It begins to clarify things. Boys don't want to have a vision. See, boys always want to have their options open. They don't want to declare what they're going to do. They want to say, well, I may do this later today or later this week or later this month or this year. Boys don't like to say, hey, here's where I'm going in the future. Jesus was, in my opinion, the greatest man that ever lived, one of the smartest men that ever lived, the smartest man that ever lived. He was also God, which enabled him to do those things. But he had a vision, and his vision was to build us. It was to build you and to do something unique and powerful in every single one of us. In fact, after he was gone, the book of Ephesians, Paul says some things kind of characterizing what Jesus was about and his vision. Here's what he says. He says, now I say and testify in the Lord that you must no longer walk as the Gentiles do in the futility of their minds. So basically, the Gentiles in this context are kind of this group of people who are different from the nation of Israel. All right, these are, to be a Gentile was kind of a moniker of immaturity. It was somebody who, you know, if you're a Gentile, you're not really mature spiritually. And so in the vernacular of today's series, we could actually say something like, you know, no longer walk like the rest of the boys walk, like the Gentiles walk, you know, like boys walk. You need to get out of that path and get on a different path. And then Paul goes into talking about, well, I assume that you know what Jesus did for us and how to come into a relationship with him and what that looks like. And then he picks up in verse 22 and he says, instead, put off concerning your former conduct the old man, which grows corrupt according to deceitful lusts, and be renewed in the spirit of your mind and put on the new man. He says, put on the new man, which was created according to God in true righteousness and holiness. He says, put off the boy, which grows corrupt, which is driven by deceitful lusts and desires, and put on the new man. Put on the new man. In the purest sense, in the truest sense, what he's talking about here is a big theological word right here. He's talking in the salvific sense. He's talking about a point of salvation right here. He's basically saying all of us by nature, we're by nature going our own direction. And we're doing our own thing, and we're apart from God. But when we come into a relationship with Jesus, he's saying we need to put off the old ways. He says you need to put off the old man things, the things that lead you to like deceitful and lustful things. You need to put on the new man. You need to become new. And Jesus, he transforms us in this process. And this is kind of an illustration or a jumping off point, you know, for us to put off our boyish ways, to put off our selfishness, to put off our, I'm going to take my ball and I'm going to go home when things don't go my way, to put off my independence. We need to take off our boyhood pants and put on our man pants is what he's saying. Now, Jesus was somebody who had crazy focus, right? I mean, Jesus, you know, he's so focused that you know, he's able to do certain things and say certain things that allow him to say yes to things and to say no to other things, right? And so one of the things that we see is that Jesus, he has this interesting story where he has a woman come to him, and he actually tells her no. Right? She actually has a need that needs to be met, she's asking for help, and my word, I mean, what guy, when a woman comes and says, hey, I need some help right here, what guy says, nope, I can't help you right now? Well, this is what Jesus does right here in Matthew chapter 15. It says, he answered her and said, I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. So this is a Gentile woman. And this Gentile woman, she's asking for Jesus to spiritually engage right here. And he's like, you know what? I've got to focus right now. I've got to focus. I am here. My focus is my fellow Jews. And she kind of pushes back on him and tries to impress him with what's going on and the need she has in her life. And I'm not going to get into the whole story, but nonetheless, she ends up impressing him, or he just is like, I'm done. I need to move on. Either way, he goes, all right, I'm going to meet your need. Here, your needs are met. I got to go on because I'm focusing on a very specific thing. This is what we see Jesus do right here. He's like, I'm very focused on what I'm doing, and there's certain things I am doing and certain things I'm not doing. So here's the thing when we focus. When you focus, someone is going to be threatened. Because when you focus, it means you're not focusing on them. See, when you focus on something way out in front of you, it means in certain ways, certain things right here and right now may not be getting all of your attention because you're focusing on where you're going. So one of the questions we have to ask ourselves is, what is my focus? What am I focusing on that's going to bring long-term benefits to me, to my family, to my children, to my spouse, to my community? Do I know why I say yes to certain things? Do I know why I say no to certain things? See, our society does not want us to focus. Because, see, vision isn't just about, you know, having a good day. Right? It's not just, you know, man, did I do something good today? It's long term. Third thing, men think long term, boys live for today. See, Jesus had this vision statement, and we see it get tweaked kind of in different places in the Bible. In fact, in the book of Luke, he says it this way, in Luke 19. He says, the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost. Jesus is like, that's what I do. I seek and I save that which is lost, which includes all of us. You and I are part of his vision statement. He says, my goal is to seek and to save everyone, the humankind, and close the gap, bring people into a relationship with my Father. You know what's interesting about Jesus? Is there's no historian worth his salt that wouldn't agree that Jesus is the most impactful person that's ever walked the earth. All right, doesn't matter if you're atheist, Buddhist, you know, from some other world religion. No question, most people worth their salt, you know, historians would say, yes, Jesus was more impactful than any other man. He put more impactful things in motion than any other man. Schools, hospitals, you know, groups of people who care for one another. And yet, look at his life. He died an abject failure, right? I mean, think about this. He goes to a cross, right? He's been teaching. He's been holding all these seminars where people flock to him in groves. He's been having seminars, and all of a sudden he goes to the cross, he dies, and they're all gone. His best friends. They were there, and then all of a sudden he dies, and they're gone. In fact, some people even believe he wasn't really the Messiah. He was just a zealot. A zealot is somebody who was just throwing a revolt against the nation or the empire of Rome. But there's not really any data on that soever. And yet, even if there was, he failed miserably at that. But think about it. Jesus wasn't playing for the immediate. He wasn't playing for like the 33 years that he's walking on the earth. He's playing for a long-haul vision. He's playing for people in, you know, Bangladesh in the year 10,020. He's playing for people sitting in a dark room in 2017 in Fishers, Indiana. He's doing the long-term thing, the high-stakes thing of helping people be able to relate to God through him. By going through the pain and the discomfort on a cross in the immediate for the long-term benefit for all humankind. See, I tell you what, whenever I see a long-term vision, I tell you what, it inspires me. I don't know if it inspires you. I saw a recent story by a guy by the name of Arthur Guinness. You may know him well. Some of you know him too well, probably. Arthur has a fascinating story. When I tell you this, I tell you what, Guinness beer sales are going to spike in our community because this is a really cool thing. You're going to be like, oh, man, that's cool. So Arthur Guinness saw that men, grown men, were acting like boys. He's like, we have grown men, 50-year-old men who are acting like boys because they're always getting drunk. They're always getting drunk and not taking care of their families, not providing for their families because they're drinking too much. And so part of the reason, he said, was because their only option was like Irish whiskey or hard liquor. And he realized something. He said, I don't want to start a war I can't win. See, men never start a war they at least believe they can't win. And so he said, you know, the idea of asking men to, you know, not drink, stop drinking forever and for all, he's like, that's not really an attainable goal for most men, all right? I mean, you know, maybe for a time of focus or a time of training to commit to that, but not over the long haul. So he said, I need to create an alcoholic drink that has less alcohol content so that men can drink a lot more ounces without getting drunk. All right, because that's how men bond. I mean, I want men to be able to bond, but they can drink more, but not get drunk. And so Guinness beer was invented right there. That's how it happened. And by the way, what's really cool about this is Arthur Guinness was a Christ follower. He's a Christian. This is a vision God gave to him. Now, the fascinating thing about this is that he was criticized, of course, by many. He's still criticized today as a Christian for doing this. But his vision was beyond just, you know, giving an alcohol content that was less so men don't get drunk. He actually had a vision for his family as well. He had a vision for a business that was going to provide for his family. And in fact, get this. He signed, when he began his business, a 9,000-year lease. Get that. 9,000 years. I mean, he entered into a lease where he paid 100 pounds up front, which is approximately like $150 US, and then he paid something like 45 pounds a year, $65 US a year after that, and he began the Guinness Brewery. And that factory is still standing today, still under the 9,000-year lease. And people around here are like, you're crazy. What are you doing? What are you doing to sign a 9,000-year lease? He's like, man, I'm gonna tap into the public water supply forever. That's why I'm doing a 9,000-year lease. I mean, listen, this is like a long-term vision. These things inspire us. And it's gone through like corporate takeover a few times, but it's still there. See, we're never inspired by somebody that just has a good day. We're never inspired by somebody that just has a good moment. We're inspired by people who have a long-term vision. In fact, I saw one of my favorite video clips, inspirational clips, this last week. I sent it out to some guys that I'm coaching and mentoring this week. And it has great application for what we're talking about today. If you've seen it, man, I want you to see it again, because this is a long-term vision right here.
We're going to bring it on in. It's time now. It's all city. We got to do it for them, dog. We got to do it for Cleveland. They're waiting on us. Every single night, every single practice, every single game, we gotta give it all we got. Cause they gonna ride with us. Everything that we do on this floor will be because of this city. We owe them. We're gonna grind for this city. They're gonna support us, man, but we gotta give it all back to them. We get it done. The toughness that we have on the court is gonna come from this city. Everybody, the whole city of Cleveland, that's what it's all about. It's time to bring them something special. Let's go, bring it on in, everybody. Let's go, let's go. Hard work on three, together on six. One, two, three.
Hard work.
Four, five, six.
Together.
Hard work on three, together on six. One, two, three.
Hard work.
Four, five, six.
Together.
Here we go, man. Hard work on three, together on six. One, two, three.
Hard work.
Four, five, six.
Together.
Right here. Let's get it. It's all us. Cleveland on three. One, two, three.
My words. Like, I tear up every single time, right? Why does this move us? I mean, it doesn't matter. Most of you are like, oh, Paul George. It's not about LeBron, all right? It's about, he has a long, if you know anything about Cleveland, right? There, man, the city's been in the dumps, and he's saying, hey, this is not about basketball. He's saying, we're doing something in the city. The city needs to be lifted. This is like the story of Nehemiah right here, saying, hey, the city's in shambles. We need to gather around and do something to inspire our city. It's a vision for something bigger. See, most of us struggle with this. Why do we struggle with this? It's because vision is hard. It's hard to have a vision. See, it's always easier to just walk through the default open doors than to push through barriers after a vision. Fourth thing, men push through barriers. Boys go through open doors. Boys are like, oh, an open door, oh, I just got a new job offer. Looks like an open door, more money, I ought to take that. You know, boys go, oh, she said I could do X, Y, and Z. I mean, that's an open door, right? I ought to take that open door. You know, that's not vision. Vision is hard. I mean, it's so weird in our culture today. We have this, like, brand of spirituality, this, like, sugary brand of spirituality that I don't see in the Bible today. I don't see in the life of Jesus. I mean, I hear people say, well, if God's involved, I mean, that means everything's just going to fall into place, right? It's all going to happen exactly the way it should and real easy. No, it doesn't happen that way. I mean, I don't see that happen in the Bible at all. I mean, walking through open doors is not necessarily being led by vision or even a vision of God. Nehemiah, he didn't say, oh, an open door. Rebuilding the city is going to be easy. He said, man, listen, I looked out. There are people that want to take us down. We're going to rebuild our city for our families, for our wives, for our children, for our homes. He said, we're going to do something here, and it's going to be hard. I mean, the Apostle Paul, when he went on missionary journeys, it wasn't like, hey, let's go on a cruise together and, you know, visit everyone. No, they're getting, like, shipwrecked. They're getting thrown in jail. Vision is hard. See, boys just want things handed to them. See, boys just want the government to hand it to them or their parents to hand it to them. Or, you know, they want a perpetual, you know, salary raise every year just because. And, you know, no, in the Bible we see people leaning in to the vision God has given them and pushing through barriers. Boys don't want to lean in. We see Jesus. Jesus goes into really intense vision mode at times. And when this happened, people actually saw his countenance change. In fact, take a look at Luke 9. It says, he set his face toward Jerusalem. What's Jerusalem? Well, Jerusalem is where he's waiting to be crucified. That's where they're waiting to kill him. He's going to be killed. And this ties into Isaiah 57. And no doubt, I think Jesus thought about Isaiah 50 verse 7 many, many times, where the prophet said, therefore I have set my face like a flint. See, all of a sudden, people around Jesus, they're like, my goodness, look at Jesus. Man, he is resolved. Man, that dude, he knows what he's doing and where he's going. Jesus right now, man, he is a man with a purpose. He's a man who knows where he's going, and he is resolved. His eyes are on Jerusalem. I'm set. People saw it. They saw it. He knew it was going to be hard. He knew he needed to set his eyes, and his countenance changed. It was just crazy to me sometimes how we keep thinking that things are going to get easier that we have a vision for. You know, family challenges. Listen, they get different. They don't get easier, right? Work challenges just get larger. I mean, the more successful we are, the larger the challenges get. I mean, what we're trying to do here at Crosspoint, we're in the process of expanding our infrastructure, trying to continue to accomplish more of the vision God's given us here. And I tell you what, it's difficult. There are always barriers that we have to cross. In fact, later today, our directional team is going to be meeting, and we're going to be setting out a time frame for when we're going to add our third weekend service. I mean, this has been on our radar. We've been talking about it. We're setting the time frame this afternoon. Now, as we do this, there's barriers already that we're facing. There's things that we're facing that are making that difficult. But when you have a vision, you push through that. You also, prune things at times. That's what you do when you have a vision. You say no to certain things. In fact, some of you recently, you've been saying, well, hey, what's going on with last Wednesday or first Wednesday or whatever the heck you've been calling it, because it's not on the calendar. Well, no, we're not doing it anymore. We canned it. We pruned it. I mean, I know it was a good thing. There were a lot of people that benefited from it, but it wasn't hitting the intended vision, the longer, bigger-term vision of what we believe God has in store. And so we said, you know what? We're pulling the plug on that because we've got to put our focus on other things, other ways of developing people. And it's hard. See, whenever you lead and you go by vision, it's hard. Why is it hard? Because it requires hard decisions. One of the best vision statements that's impacted our country, you and I right now, is the Declaration of Independence. That was a vision statement. In fact, when our founding fathers of our country, when they laid out this vision statement, they knew that they would be pushing through barriers. In fact, take a look at the last couple lines of the Declaration. It says, and for the support of this Declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. See, they weren't making a sacred decision knowing that the next few million months of their lives were going to get easier. No, they were making a decision knowing that the next few months or years or decades even are going to be more difficult. They were making a decision on the front end that's going to have a really difficult pathway, walking it out and all kinds of barriers, but they had a long-term goal and they were focused on the long-term that you and I, get this, are still being blessed by today. That's why it's called the Declaration of Independence. Because they were declaring something. They're putting their hand in there and saying, you know what? It's time to go in a different way. When you get a long-term vision, you declare it. You state it. It begins to get cemented into who you are. Last thing, men declare, boys just kind of drift. See, when you declare yourself, you say, you know what? There's certain things you can expect from me. And there's other things that you're not going to expect from me any longer. You declare yourself. This is what it means to declare ourselves. See, boys don't want to declare themselves. Boys don't want to declare what they're going to do with their lives. Boys don't want to declare, hey, I want to marry you. They'd just rather keep living with you. See, that's what boys do. Boys don't say, hey, here's my 10-year vision for my life. I don't know if it's exactly going to go this way, but here's what I'm going after. See, boys just drift. They go relationship to relationship, job to job, thing to thing. They take the path of least resistance. Boys drift, but men declare. One of the more heartwarming stories that I always am drawn to in the scriptures is this moment where Jesus gets declared. We find it in the book of Matthew. It's also in the book of Luke. And it's a time where Jesus comes before God, and he gets declared by his heavenly Father. In fact, take a look at it in this version, Matthew chapter 3. It says, and behold, a voice from heaven said, this is my beloved Son with whom I am well pleased. Then Jesus was led up by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. I mean, how would that be if you had the moment one-on-one before your heavenly Father to hear him say, you're my son or you're my daughter in whom, man, I am well pleased. I am so proud of you. See, that was a declaring moment of affirmation for Jesus followed by intense vision focus, right? I mean, he goes into 40 days of temptation in the desert. That's followed by 3 years of teaching and miracles, and then by a few days of abuse and beating, ultimately going to the cross, and he was able to do that because he was declared. I have to think that was important to him. In fact, one of the most intriguing verses in the New Testament to me is when we see this phrase, this thing said about Jesus, where it says, Jesus grew in stature and wisdom. And it's always kind of baffled me. What does that mean? Right? What does that mean? Well, here's what it means. All right, we get the stature part, right? I mean, we get that Jesus, you know, Mary wasn't, you know, popping some 165-pound, you know, baby out of her birth canal, right? We get that part. I mean, Jesus was born as a baby, grew in stature. But what does it mean that he grew in wisdom? What that means is that he always kept the Ten Commandments. He never sinned, so he kept all of them. But it means he didn't always know the Ten Commandments. He had to grow in his awareness of them. I mean, it means at the age of 5, he probably wasn't aware that he was the Son of God. It means at the age of 10, he probably didn't know that probably didn't have a picture in his mind that one day he was going to die on a cross. It means that as he grew in an awareness of God's vision for his life and what it meant to fulfill those things. And so I think this thing, this moment where he's baptized, where he hears his father say to him, "Hey, son, I'm proud of you. I'm well pleased." I don't think that was just a let me check this off the box moment right here. I really don't. I think for him, that was a defining moment. I think that was a moment where, you know, we don't see any teaching happen before that moment. We don't see any miracles happen before that moment. I think this is a moment where he's declared and where he is declared a man. And it meant something to him. See, one of the major issues we have in our society today is we don't know when we're a man. We don't know, you know, boys don't have this sense in many cases of declaring themselves, you know, so we just end up in this perpetual adolescence where we're just boys ongoing. And do you realize that the term adolescence is actually a pretty new term? It was actually invented like in like the 1880s. I mean, it's only in the last couple centuries that this has even been on the radar of us. I mean, you know, in the history of maleness, nobody really knew that you could have this season where you could go through a weird period of just being an idiot and being immature, and it was okay, right? And you could do it like into your 20s, 30s, and 40s. In fact, Psychology Today, a while ago, they wrote about this. They said this. They said, another way to look at it is that in centuries past, a sexually mature male, which is somebody who could ejaculate, was never treated as a growing child. Today, sexually mature folk spend perhaps 6 years, ages 12 to 38, living under their parent, the authority of their parents. All right, we have this extended like adolescent period with this thing where we're allowing boyish behavior to go on. We say, oh, it's okay. They're just having a hard time. They're just in their adolescence. We need something we don't have in our culture that other cultures have. We need a way for boys to declare themselves and say, hey, I'm gonna be a man. I'm gonna start tracking on manly things. See, Jesus had a need for that, right? Jewish culture has the bar mitzvah. I mean, it's kind of morphed out of just being a declaration thing, but nonetheless, they have that. In South Africa, they have this thing that's not very healthy. Nonetheless, it kind of accomplishes it. You know, the witch doctor takes the boys up on a mountain, and in their, you know, tweener years, he circumcises them all with the same tool. I mean, it's very unhealthy. It actually is part of what's spreading AIDS all across the planet. And yet, nonetheless, I love the sentiment behind it that there's a moment where boys are declared men. I mean, in some cultures, you know, kill a deer and you drink the blood, or you know, in South Africa, there's these Ethiopians that the Haymark tribe, where they actually have to leap over a line of cattle. I mean, it doesn't matter what it is. There needs to be a mark where we say, this defines me, and now I'm tracking as a man. Jack Donovan, he talks about it. He says, men cannot be men, much less good or heroic, unless their actions have meaningful consequences to people they truly care about. Strength requires an opposing force. Courage requires risk. Mastery requires hard work. Honor requires accountability to other men. Without these things, we are little more than boys playing at being a man. And there's no weekend retreat or mantra or half-assed rite of passage that can change that. A rite of passage must reflect a real change in status and responsibility for it to be anything more than theater. No reimagined manhood of convenience can hold its head high so long as the earth remains the tomb of our ancestors. See, I think every man craves another man looking at him in the eye and saying, you're a man, you're a man. I think God's wired us for that. And so today, we're actually going to do that. We're going to declare ourselves. We're going to give you the chance to declare ourselves men as men. And this isn't like a nice little way to put a bow tie on a series. This isn't like a cool way to get another cross point memento for you to walk away with, all right? It's none of that. But for those of you who are here, men, or even boys, I mean, boys that are 12 years old and older that want to say, you know what? I'm beginning to say, you know what? I need to track as a man. We're going to invite you to declare yourself this morning. Now, maybe you've been tracking, but maybe you've realized I need to up my game. Or there's some things that God's been doing in me. Maybe some of you have gone to man camp or you started Fight Club and you just realize, man, God's doing something. And I need to declare that I'm going in a different way. And so we've selected a fellowship of men, a pre-selected group that are going to come forward in just a moment. They're going to line up here across the front. And you're going to be able, as we sing, to come to them. And you're going to be able to come to them. And they're going to give you one of these right here. They're going to give you a bracelet, all right, that has the five marks of manhood on it, something you can carry around, have with you all the time. And this has the declaration of the five marks of what it means to be a man. That you have a vision, that you work, that you're a team player, that you're a protector, and you take minority position. And so I'm going to go ahead and have our fellowship of men go ahead and come forward and come to your places. And let's the rest of us go ahead and stand. And here's what we're going to do. Maybe you've never had this done before, or maybe you just know right now as we wrap this thing up, this is important for you. Maybe you've been a man. You're like, man, I've been a man, but there's places where I've need to up my game, and I've realized I need to do that. And so you're going to have the opportunity, anybody 12 years up and older, to come and declare yourself, and they're going to give you one of these. Now, when they give this to you, this isn't some little, put your head down and receive a prayer. They're gonna help you put this on, and then I want you to put your fists in the air. This is going to be a declaration moment. We're gonna go, you know what? I'm declaring myself right now. Right now, I'm saying I'm gonna track in a different way. I'm gonna go the way of men, the godly man that God is calling me to be. And these guys, they're gonna put their hands on your shoulders after they put this on your wrist, and they're gonna say whatever they remember that they're supposed to say. All right, that's what they're gonna say to you. Now they're gonna put their hands on your shoulder and they're gonna raise their hand with you and they're gonna say, you're a man. You're a man, and they're gonna list those five things out. This is what we're going to do, all right? And so I don't know what's going to happen here. This may be, a handful of us, could be a lot of us, but we just feel like we need to have a moment where we say, man, it's time to go in a different direction. And if you feel led to just declare that for your family, for your spouse, for, whoever's around you, then we invite you as we sing to do this. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, I just thank you for the series, God. I thank you for bringing it to a close. God, I thank you that there's going to be more men as a result of this series and as a result of today. I just pray that you would cement, God, cement into every single one of us the unique thing you're calling us to be as men. Every future man that comes up here today, God, would your grace be on us, I pray. Amen. Amen. All right, man, let's do this. As we sing, you can make your way forward during these songs and just cement ourselves saying, I'm a man. Here we go.